Chris Kandai here. Always a pleasure to speak to you. Such fond memories of my time as part of the church family there. Some of you will know that 30 years ago, I got baptized in the Saltersford building, in the pull-up secret compartment under the floor, filled with water. I got baptized. And actually, my friend Miriam got baptized on the same night. And that friend became a girlfriend, and she became my wife. And we now live together here in Tame with our six children together. And maybe none of that would happen without Sources for Church. Miriam and I used to hitch from Warwick University to get to church each Sunday morning. And that's how we kind of first got to know each other. So it's a real pleasure to come back home and speak to you in this way. Now, I don't know how you're coping with online worship. What do you make of it? Some people think it's the best thing ever. I got to write a little article for the Times talking about how 25% of our population have tuned in to some kind of online service since the lockdown. And 5% have never been to church before. This is their first experience of church. They don't know any different. How do you find it? If you fancy voting in the comment section, give it a score out of 10. How do you find online worship? As you're voting, some people think it's really funny. Maybe you saw the vicar that was trying to broadcast himself and leant a little bit too close to a candle and set himself on fire. And I think the headline in the newspaper was, "Oh, I appear to have set myself on fire." But what do you make of it? How do you cope with online worship? Well, I don't know about you. There are lots of advantages. We don't have to travel. Our kids are happy engaging in this way. I've seen all sorts of people, older people, younger people engage. We've been able to broadcast it to our local community, hadnam.net, which means that people that don't normally go to church can kind of tune in without any extra hassle. They don't have to dress up to go to church. We've seen quite a few thousand people from the village just drop in. Don't know how long they stayed. They stayed for at least 3 seconds. That's a metric that Facebook gives you. We did a walking church where we kind of walked around the village because some people are in isolation, haven't been outside, and so I thought I'd do the sermon online, walking around the town. So there are lots of advantages, but there are some disadvantages. And this idea of giving it a score out of 10, it's a bit mischievous, isn't it? Because we often review worship. We often tell people how we feel about our worship services. I can think of a walk back from our church when we weren't in lockdown. And we walk because we live quite close to our church. And the kids were saying, "Oh my goodness, I can't believe we were singing such old hymns. It's 2020. What are we doing singing songs from 2019? So old fashioned." Or maybe the kids would say something like, "Oh my goodness, the sermon just seemed to go on and on and on. It was like a plane trying to land at Heathrow Airport in the fog. It just kept circling and circling and circling and never landing." And I'm saying, "Oh, kids, I'm so sorry. I'll definitely try and do better next time. Thanks for the feedback." But the weird thing about reviewing worship is there's only one person that can review our worship, and that would be God himself, the one to whom our worship is offered. None of us has the right to review worship because it wasn't for us. Worship was always supposed to be about God and what God wanted. And so sometimes when we say, "Oh, you know, I don't get on with church at the moment, the sermons aren't interesting, or I don't like the music, or I don't like the setup." Wrong question. The question should be, what does God ask of us? What does he require of us? How can we offer to God what he deserves? That's the right question. And the book of Isaiah is what we're going to be looking at tonight, a prophecy offered to the people of Judah just before they were taken off into exile. We're talking around 700 or so years before Jesus was born. And it kicks off with Isaiah chapter 1, which reviews Israel's worship, and God is pretty critical. And then it goes through a whole series of different judgments, I guess, on the people of Israel and some of the surrounding nations for how they've treated God and how they've treated the poor. But I want to zoom in on Isaiah 58. So if you've got a Bible, you might want to open that up, and I'll just read a little bit of it to you. Isaiah 58, verse 1. "Shout it aloud. Do not hold back. Raise your voice like a trumpet. Declare to my people their rebellion and to the house of Jacob their sins. For day after day they seek me out. They seem eager to know my ways, as if they were a nation that does what is right, and has not forsaken the commands of its God. They ask me for just decisions, and seem eager for God to come near to them. Why have we fasted, they say, and you have not seen it? Why have we humbled ourselves, and you have not noticed? Now you can see there's an error there already. They have this kind of transactional relationship with God. If we give God this, then he will give us that. That was the idea. You know, if we turn up at church, then God will give us this. If we give 10% of our offering, then God will give us this. That's not how worship was supposed to offer. It's not a transaction. I give God faith, he gives me blessing. It doesn't work like that, and God is critical of it. Worship is supposed to be a response to grace. God has loved us and shown his mercy to us, not because of anything we've done, but because of his compassion and mercy. And we want to respond to God by offering him the best that we can give him. Not just in words, not just in thoughts, but our whole lives. As Romans 12 put it, offer your bodies to God. This is your spiritual act of worship, offering all that we are. But the passage goes on. Isaiah 58. Verse 3. Yet on the day of your fasting you do as you please and exploit all your workers. Pause. God is already making the connection that it's not enough just to offer him some kind of ritual. That, you know, if we do the spiritual stuff, if we fast from food or fast from TV or if we sing the song really loudly, then that kind of offsets any bad that we've done. God says, no, your whole life is supposed to be worship. You can't just say, I'm going to go without something, but I'm going to exploit the poor. You can't treat God like the mafia dude. I don't know if you've seen the Godfather movies, but they go to church on Sunday or for baptisms or for weddings, but the rest of the week, they're exploiting the poor. They're murdering and bullying. And God says, it doesn't work like that. You can't just offer me worship on a Sunday and not live a just life Monday through Saturday. Verse 4, your fasting ends in quarrelling and strife and in striking each other with wicked fists. Can you imagine that? After a worship service, after a day of fasting or a prayer retreat, people start beating each other up. God say, this is not what you're supposed to be doing. You've completely lost the plot. It's like you're trying to treat me like magic. If you watch the Harry Potter movies, my daughter has read all of the Harry Potter books 4 times in lockdown. It's been a lifesaver and it's really boosted her literacy. She's really struggled to read, so I'm grateful to J.K. Rowling for writing. But the premise is, it doesn't matter who you are. As long as you know the right spells, you get what you want. And some people think prayer is like that. Some people think worship is like that. If I just say the right things at the right time, God will have to answer me. If we can get 2,000 people together to pray, God will have to answer us. And God said, no, that's not how it works at all. Verse 4, you cannot fast as you do today and expect your voice to be heard on high. Some people think fasting is like a rocket boost for your prayer life. If you fast and go without food, then God will have to listen to your prayers. It gives it extra power. God says it doesn't work like that. It's got to be connected to justice. Verse 5, is this the kind of fast I have chosen? Only a day for a man to humble himself? Is it only for bowing one's head like a reed and for lying on a sackcloth and ashes? Sorry, a bit windy. Is that what you call a fast, a day acceptable to the Lord? Is not this the kind of fasting I have chosen? To loose the chains of injustice and untie the cords of the yoke, to set the oppressed free and break every yoke? Is it not to share your food with the hungry and to provide the poor wanderer with shelter? When you see the naked, to clothe him and not to turn away from your own flesh and blood. Then your light will break forth like the dawn and your healing will quickly appear. Then your righteousness will go before you and the glory of the Lord will be your rear guard. Then you will call and the Lord will answer. You will cry for help and he will say, here am I. Think about that for a minute. Fasting. of all the spiritual disciplines, I think it's the most challenging. I struggle to fast between meals, particularly since our family have basically become vegetarians for environmental reasons. I'm hungry all the time, and I really want to eat. So the idea of going without food in order to honour God, I find that tough. And so people that fast regularly are in the kind of spiritual elite, as far as I'm concerned. But God's going, look, that isn't actually the point of fasting. I'm not interested in your ritual if it doesn't lead to justice. Here's an illustration you may have heard me say before, but if you haven't, it's a good one. So my son used to cycle to school, and used to have to go morning and afternoon, whatever the weather, cycling to school. He was really good. He's actually into cycling right now in lockdown. He does it for his exercise, our oldest, Joel. And imagine that somehow his cycling route took him past your house in Warwick. And imagine it's a frosty morning and he takes the hill a little bit too quickly, and he takes the corner near your house a bit too fast, and he goes spinning out, flying across the tarmac, and he skins his arms and his legs, and he manages to notice your front door. And then, just using his elbows, he manages to commando crawl his way to your front door, and he gets his lips next to the letterbox, and he shouts, "Help! Help!" And you open the door, and you welcome him in, you bandage his wounds, you give him a hot mug of cocoa, and then with another responsible adult, assuming lockdown's over, so you don't break child protection protocols, you put him in your car and you drive him to my house. Now guys, if we were acquaintances before, we were friends for life now, that you would do this for my own flesh and blood. But imagine the scenario had worked out differently. Wind back the clock. My son's come off his bike, skinned his arm and his legs, made his way to your front door, commando calling, shouts, "Help, help." And you go, "Hey, I recognise that voice. Sounds like Chris, spoke at our online service at Saltisford. I never did write to say thank you." And you fire up your laptop and you start to email me a beautiful thank you note. And because it's Warwick, you put it in iambic pentameter, and a little picture of the castle in the background and everything. And when I open the email, at first I'm really moved that you've been so kind. And then I realised you did that instead of helping my son. You substituted some kind of ritual, some kind of praise, instead of actually helping those that I love. Guys, if we were friends before, I'm not sure we're going to be any more, that you would ignore my own flesh and blood in order to offer me something else instead. That's what God's saying in Isaiah 58. It's all very well you do your fasting, but if it doesn't mean you actually care for those that God loves, there's a serious problem. Listen to how he phrases what that care looks like. To loose the chains of injustice and untie the cords of the yoke. That could have to do with how you treat your colleagues and your workers and your employees and those that your businesses affect. It could be advocating for justice, using your voice and your vote, not just for our own benefit, not just to make sure we get our rights or our lower taxes, but speaking up for vulnerable people. That could mean here, is it not to share your food with the hungry and to provide the poor wanderer with shelter? Sharing food with the hungry. Now, it doesn't say sending a gift package halfway across the world to sponsor a child. That sounds like you might take a portion of your food and invite someone to share it. That sounds like hospitality that you share with the needy in a face-to-face way. It could be when you see the naked to clothe him, and not to turn away from your own flesh and blood. Someone so poor that they're naked, you shouldn't think of them as someone else, other people. They're our own flesh and blood. They're just like us. And therefore we're supposed to show a kind of common humanity and a common grace towards one another. Now, you know, I run a fostering and adoption charity. You know, James Rose is an excellent key part of that. And so I'd want to translate some of that into caring for vulnerable children. Warwickshire needs more foster parents. When the lockdown ends, many children who have been invisible to social services will suddenly appear and at school. And sadly, some of them, because of lockdown, will have faced abuse and neglect. And they're going to need someone to take them in. They're going to need foster carers. And so what about thinking about becoming a fostering family? Or even what about thinking about adoption? What about those kids that can never go back to live with their mum and dad and they need a forever family? What about them? Isn't that a way to live out Isaiah 58? To share your food with the hungry, to clothe the naked, to offer the poor wanderer some shelter. Now, that isn't the only way that you can respond to the needs of the world, but it is a very real and pressing one. It's not one that we talk about a lot in church, although you guys have been great. We're so grateful that over the years you've sent us about £6,000 in gifts and support and fundraising, and we're so grateful for that. But actually, we also need people who would step up and open their homes. And it is the most challenging and wonderful thing that you can do. For our family, it's been unbelievably challenging, but incredibly rewarding. And we feel like really connected with God when we do it. We feel it's part of our spiritual worship, even if we're no good at actually fasting. And there are plenty of other ways you could try this. It could be what you're doing already, helping the elderly. It could be community work. It could be changing your vocation. Many people in lockdown are rethinking their values. Do I really need to live for my bottom line? Is it really about career progression? We're celebrating those who are essential workers like the NHS or our refuse collectors or social workers. And you might want to rethink your whole vocation, your job. If you're a young person, what are you planning to do with the rest of your life? How does God's concern for the vulnerable fit into that? Whatever it is, I think we need to start to offer God the kind of worship he asked for in the first place. And not get away with thinking, if I just turn up at an online service, or if I just turn up in a face-to-face service, sing a few hymns, read the Bible, do communion, that's me done. But we've got to think about the kind of worship God deserves, and he deserves full-blooded, whole-hearted worship with all that we've got. And just before we close, you might go, oh, Chris, this is a bit Old Testament, isn't it? Not sure we do Old Testament. That's not that important. Surely the New Testament doesn't have anything to say like this. Well, maybe that's part of your homework. Have a look at Matthew 25, the sheep and the goats. See if you see any connections between Isaiah 58 and Matthew 25. And if you're still not sure, have a look at James 1:27, where we're told religion that God our Father accepts as pure and blameless is to care for widows and orphans